Yo, Short Box Nation, this is Botter clocking in with a very quick announcement to make before we get on with the show. I'll be in Chicago attending C2E2, and if you'll be in Chicago attending the convention too, it means that you have a very unique opportunity to attend a live podcast show like never before. I'll be hosting a comic podcast crossover live show on Friday, April 26th. I'm going to be joined by very good friends of the show and frequent guest co-hosts like Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast and Greg Ligtig from the First Issue Club. We're recording a live podcast show that's celebrating the best comics of the year so far. We're going to talk about the creators that are absolutely crushing it. And considering the people involved with the panel, you can expect a great time. You can expect the typical brand of comedy and entertainment. If you ever heard any of the other episodes where Chris and Greg have been guest co-hosts, you can expect that on steroids. So once again, if you're attending C2E2 this weekend and you're looking for something to do or you need a break from the convention floor and standing in lines, I highly encourage you to come sit in for this live podcast show taking place the Friday morning of the convention at 11:15 a.m. I'll have links to the room and the rest of the panel information in the show notes. So check that out if you'll be in Chicago. Come on out, sit in on the panel, and have a good time. Hopefully I get to meet you. With that being said, let's get this show started.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Short Box, Season 6. Yeah.
Do y'all want to get your one-liners and zingers off before we actually start the show?
I did not know, first of all, Dr. Doom, I did not know he spoke with his hands that much. He was like, look at me.
He's like, this is what you have created.
And when he FaceTimed him.
He Skyped the dude and he was like, hi. He said, hello, like opened up with, hello, hi, it's good to see me.
Well, everything he said, he was like, I built a laser, and it's going to blow up New York. Have a good day. And real quick.
Hey, Reed, you guys are totally fucked.
And I wasn't sure, was he asking Reed to save him in the end, or was he saying, you can never save. Like, I was like, do I save you?
It's classic self-pity.
Yeah, it's like the, you know, save me, and then mocks him for trying to help him out.
Yeah. I think the way that Doom is in the comics, at least, everybody loves him in Latveria.
I mean, Mordor in this movie.
Yeah, right. Like, nobody, like, you ask somebody in Latveria, like what's it like working or living under Doom's reign, right? They'll be like, we've got universal health care. The robots pretty much take out all the garbage right on time, you know. And Doom's like, he's like the best leader to his people. Yeah. And then his side hustle or his hobby, you know, when he gets bored, just makes shit up and tries to kill the world or make Reed's life a living hell. So it's like, yeah, they kind of sum that up in this movie a little bit, I think.
Jokes aside, I think the movie-stealing moment was, Ben, I love you.
Just feeling the dude's face once.
I was going to say,
strong love.
Just Doom's dad jokes for me.
Oh, man.
It's good to see me. Do you hear him say that?
Yeah.
And they were attacking, he was like flexing while they're shooting bullets.
Oh, yeah. That was the best.
What? Like, that's something a rich guy would do. Like, he's like, I'm coming to New York. And what are you going to do? I'm going to break up a homeless meeting. Yeah. Like, what? You have nothing else to do? They're in the Baxter building. Go get them.
Not yet.
Real quick.
I'm going to spawn alley first. Yes, with these homeless people.
By show of hands, how many people agree with me that Doom's henchmen look just like Cesar? First time he showed up.
What?
I was like, that scene? The one that was the creepy doctor where he was like, the burns were severe.
You're talking about the dude that was holding his cigarette like a fucking French dude? Like, he was like,
that was a vape.
That's Dave Grohl.
He looked like Dave Grohl.
Oh, man.
The lead singer of the Foo Fighters.
That was, pre-Foo Fighters. Or pre-, now, I don't know.
I forgot all about that part.
I think I told a few of you guys that Blythe had planned to come out, but I watched a movie yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And she ended up watching the first 5 minutes, and she was like, yeah, I think it's going to be a work night for me tonight.
Oh, man.
Good luck out there.
You don't need me to be there, do you?
No.
Drew, you're like awfully silent. Like, is this? I mean,
he's
are you
in
just,
shock.
He's yeah. in shock. The poor guy.
How good the movie was.
Look at him.
Did you guys notice that? Like, Reed's every scene later on, like his sideburns just got predominantly like whiter and whiter.
Like, the inconsistency in the older. Angel wings.
He's no. aging,
and I could not tell if he was like. I mean,
was that chest hair or was that a dark shirt? Because like, at one point, like he's wearing like this Hawaiian shirt, and I was just like, "Yo, the camera was so bad." I was just like, "What? This is the hairiest."
Oh,
stretchy
for
man.
The camera stuff, I read that when they were filming the movie, they didn't have a monitor. The directors didn't have a monitor, so they're just filming it, and it's like, I guess that'll work. They didn't have it in the budget.
I just wasn't sure if Reed was basically like empathetic towards Ben, because at one point he was like, "And Ben, you're." You always solve things with your muscles when your brain could have done it, you big dummy.
Yeah, you dumbass.
Oh, thanks.
That's stay a rock forever.
That makes me feel real good.
Oh, man.
I
all
thought
right.
the thing prosthetics were pretty
oh, yeah,
decent.
That was the oh. one thing that I thoroughly enjoyed about the movie was
it was better than the Turtles really movie.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, they like literally spent like the whole budget.
Oh, for sure.
All $50 they had on the budget on the thing's costume. That's all the one-liners and zingers I got. Yeah, you guys got them out?
Yeah, ready to start this? Uncomfortable moment at the beginning with the young.
Oh, well, yeah, man. I was going to say.
It's like, ooh.
Everybody's getting like, oh, Doom's a creep. Ben's
Reed's
a creep.
A super
Alicia's
creep.
A creep. Ben wins the creep award for waiting 10 years for looking at Sue and was like,
That's
what up, girl? You got that You got that Hermione charm. I'm going to wait. Till you're a 10,
like,
and not just 10.
Chris D'Elia stuff.
Allegedly.
So, I read somewhere that Reed was, I guess, in a boarding home where...
They didn't set that up at all.
No, they did not. Like, you had to find out. Because I was like, wait, what is he doing in this house? How do they know this old-ass dude? Why is he around this, like, minor?
When I first saw it, I didn't even know, like... Who Ben was when he's like running into the lab. It's like, who is this guy?
Playing
I didn't know any
video
of
games
people.
With another minor. Oh, this movie was creepy. All right, yo, how about we go ahead and start this episode off. Shortbox Nation, you are now tuned into a very special episode. Special because not only are you tuned into the best comic book and pop culture podcast in the country, don't believe me,
Just
ask some of our sponsors and fans out there. But this is a special episode. It's a distinguished episode because we're recording it live in front of a live audience, not just any audience.
A live studio audience.
Live studio audience.
Laugh track.
But
laugh
in
track,
front laugh. Of our short box song. Patrons. Our short box patrons.
Woo!
Yeah.
Our short box patrons are here with us here at Sunray. And a big shout outs to our patrons streaming with us here live, watching the live stream. Hello. And for everyone here, for everyone at home who just pressed play on their first short box podcast experience, I will be your host.
We're sorry.
yeah, apologies in advance.
This was the first one. Oh, God.
Yeah. I will be your host. My name is Botter Milligan, and I'm joined by my incredibly talented ensemble of friends and co-hosts. Allow me to introduce my right-hand man, Cesar Cordero.
It's clobbering time.
And making his first live podcast recording debut, Mr.
This
Andrew
guy.
Torres.
Whoa. Woo!
And, of course, last but not least, we got Edmund Danzart
Yo.
Rounding out our panel today.
Ed made this lovely poster that we see.
He sure did.
Yo, Ed did the artwork, man. You guys got the posters. Yeah, you know it.
Your Human Torch doesn't have enough CGI, though.
I know.
Yo, the Human Torch in this movie looked like Cinder from Killer Instinct. I was like, oh, shit, yo. Same graphics, too. All right, but look, now most of you listening may be familiar with the Fantastic Four, whether it be in comic form or from the animated series or from any of the three movies released in the last 15 years. But how many of you are familiar with an interpretation of Marvel's First Family from an unreleased 1994 film by the king of B-movies, Roger Corman, respectively, called The Fantastic Four? This almost forgotten gem was thought to be lost forever, of no copies thought to exist for many years. It was so forgotten that Marvel at one point denied that the film ever existed. They later went on and claimed that it was a pilot for a TV show that they scrapped.
God bless Stan Lee, man. He knows how to spin that stuff.
It wasn't until the mid-2000s that copies of the movie started circulating online and quickly became a cult favorite. A quick Google search and Daily Motion link or two, and it's pretty available to watch. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Check the episode description for a link. I say all of that to say this. Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four movie is the focus of this episode, and we only have our True Believer tier patrons to blame for this one.
Thank you.
Back in March, we launched a poll for our True Believer tier patrons, asking them what was the next installment of our bad superhero review movies. And the Fantastic Four, this Roger Corman unreleased one, beat out the likes of some of Drew's favorite movies, such as Catwoman, Elektra, and Spider-Man 3.
Elektra.
I'll stand by Spider-Man 3.
I'm starting to ask, like, why don't we just pick, like, you know, a good movie to watch and review? But our patrons kind of enjoy our misery. I say all of that and turn to you, gentlemen, who have just finished watching this movie. And I ask, what was your familiarity with this movie? Did you guys know anything about it prior to coming in here today? Did you guys watch it? I mean, what was the vibe? Ed, I'll start out with you.
I've seen it. I've heard it, just rumors about it. And if you go to conventions, you always see it on, like, a vendor's table. And you're just like, oh, this looks cheap and weird. Let's move on. But other
cheap
than that,
weird.
It's always been kind of like a mythological thing. There's a lot of lore behind it. And no footage of it ever existed, just a few of the poster pictures and images. So, but yeah, I just saw it last night for the first time. Watch it again. So,
okay, ditto. Drew, what about you?
I want to. The first time I heard about this is the same thing, like more or less on conventions, like hearing that this movie existed, and then it definitely was one of those when all the Marvel movies and X-Men movies coming out. This was like, oh, like aware of this, but there was never like any type of like full length trailer. I've only seen like snippets of it. But I never, like, this was the first time I saw it today.
Okay. See, what about you?
So
drop
I'm
that old
enough,
man knowledge.
I was about to say, I'm old enough to remember on a VHS tape, I don't remember what movie it was, but I saw the trailer for it, and I nearly creamed my jeans. The first time, I was like, what? Because, of course, it's a trailer, so they're only going to show you the stuff that they spent the most money on. Mm-hmm. So as far as I knew, I saw a Dr. Doom in the best lighting there was with the costume. I was like, hey, it does look like Dr. Doom. And then they showed the thing going, it's clobber time. I'm like, he said the thing. The thing said the thing. And then, you know, they said, coming soon, next summer. And I'm like, it never came next summer. Like, it was never it was never released. And then, like Ed, I went to, you know, when I was old enough to go to, like, conventions and stuff, I would see the vendors and I'd say, no, that can't be. Yeah. That can't be it. I made that up. That's a memory I made up. They never made a Fantastic Four movie in the 90s. It's ridiculous. And then they wanted to charge me $500 for a bootleg copy of it. So it was like, nah.
My dad used to have a bunch of, like, just bootleg movies. I mean,
he's from Jersey, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it was, like, easy for him to get.
Well, your dad had to know about this. He's a huge
fan. Well, here's the thing. He was telling me about it, but I thought it was just another bootleg movie he had or something. Like, nah, Dad, this ain't real. And then, of course, Marvel was denying it so vehemently, like, early on. It wasn't until recently. I think I might have been at a convention and seen it, and I was like, wow, they do exist. So that's kind of my familiarity. And same thing, like Ed, I ended up watching it yesterday. So it's definitely been... this will probably be the last time I ever utter this movie's name after tonight. But
can I have it?
It was funny. So, moving on. As longtime comic collectors and readers, what's your personal relationship or feelings when it comes to the Fantastic Four franchise? I mean, have you guys been longtime fans of the team? Have you guys ever collected any of the series? Fans of the previous movies or animated series? Drew, you're nodding your head.
I said no. I come from a very Puerto Rican dysfunctional family, so I didn't need to read anything else about a dysfunctional family. I was like, no, I'm good. And then I came up on the edge where I was like, they weren't cool to me. Like, I didn't care. I wanted to learn more about Spider-Man and X-Men and Hulk. Like, the Fantastic Four to me were just, like, it was, like,
they're
boring.
Like the old-fashioned superheroes.
So
yeah.
I would never, I was never like, oh, let me just hop on this. It wasn't until, like, obviously Hickman, when he came in, mm-hmm. and they started, like, I remember going to the shop, and then a lot of people were saying, hey, oh, this is a good series. This is good. And I'm like, nah. But then I went back and I was like, oh, yeah, this is actually really good. And then when Mark Millar was getting a lot of hype for all the comic books he did, him and Brian Hitch did a Fantastic Four that, like, I absolutely, like, was obsessed with, and then went back and read it, and I changed my mind.
Okay. See, what about you? Well, prior to this Fantastic Four relationship, what did you think about the team?
I mean, they're Marvel's first family, so you kind of have to like him if you're a fan of Marvel, at least for historic reasons. So, like Drew, I also come from a crazy Puerto Rican family, and I Spider-Man was my jam growing up. Like, I literally became a photojournalist in the military, and I ended up becoming Peter Parker.
You got bit by a spider?
I did. You don't want to know what happened. Things got necrotic, buddy. I was like, I don't really got time for them. And as I got older and started getting more into comics and realizing, like, how venerated they were as an art form and how people like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, the architects of the Marvel Universe, I invested time into them. And as I did, I was like, man, a lot of the characters I like in Marvel wouldn't exist if Fantastic Four book didn't exist. Like Black Panther, Namor, Namor was before that, but Doctor Doom, Silver Surfer, Galactus, Mephisto, like all these people, you're like, what? Like, you don't even think about how they all kind of came out of this wacky book. Like, it's so weird. It's ridiculous. It would be like if Hellboy came out in the 60s. Like, that's what Fantastic Four was. So as I got into it, I just was like, all right, yeah, I dig them. And when Hickman did Secret Wars, probably the best Fantastic Four story I've ever read, hands down.
Yeah, well said. I'll back you up on that. Ed, what about you?
Yeah, pretty much the only thing I've, outside of, you know, anything new besides the Secret Wars stuff, I just kind of studied the Kirby, you know, Stan Lee stuff, because that's kind of, you know, if you're into comics, you kind of like, you have to almost, you know, you're kind of obligated to recognize the impact that this comics had. But yeah, it's just, it wasn't like, you know, like Drew said, it wasn't, they were kind of like the old fashioned heroes for me, so I wasn't really into them as much outside of just respecting them as a historical, you know, a historical thing to study. But yeah, this pretty much the Kirby Lee stuff is the stuff that I'm more familiar with. I haven't really messed with the contemporary stuff.
Yeah, Fantastic Four, I mean, as you guys know, it was my dad, the Marvel OGs, I mean, it's probably his favorite comic book franchise, period. So he always had a lot of the older stuff, and quite frankly, a lot of this stuff, period. And it just never caught my attention. It wasn't as cool as Spider-Man. It wasn't as, you know, cool as Spawn or edgy as some of the other comic books I was reading. I felt it was just very slow-paced, very heavy on the science, and at the time I just could care less about science. It was my least favorite subject. So it just never really resonated with me. And plus, there's so many big words, and I'm like, oh, I just want the pictures. I remember one time I did bring a Fantastic Four comic book to school to trade with a buddy, and man, he clowned me. He was like, yo, don't ever bring some old school shit like this. Like, there's not enough action. There's too many words.
Shamed
like,
yo, you.
You need to bring, like, and I think it was like some, it was like when Image, I mean, it was like a Spawn book. He was like, yo, this is the books that, like, bring to, like, trade.
Don't bring some Youngblood.
Youngblood. Some Wet Works.
I want to hear some Malibu comics.
But they're in a healthy relationship. They're in a marriage, you know? So, it wasn't, I mean, kind of, I think we've always championed, like, Jonathan Hickman and what he did for, like, Fantastic Four and kind of bring a new life into them. I want to move on to the movie, and I want to start positive because there's plenty for us to kind of clown on, but some of your favorite moments in this movie or aspects that really kind of stood out to you guys. Ed, I'll start out with you. What are some of your favorite parts of this movie?
Oh, man. Put me on the spot. I really like, I think, as far as the Fantastic Four movies that we have been exposed to, this is probably the closest to the comic than any other movie. For the budget and being a fan of Corman and knowing what I was gonna, you know, kind of knowing what to expect going into it. Granted, you know, just from the timeline standpoint, you know, Terminator 2 came out like 2 years before this, as far as effects. But just knowing, kind of knowing what to expect, I think it was, you know, like I said, I like the Doom design. Just the overall, it's for what, you know, man, this is hard to say something good without saying something bad. But I thought, yeah, I thought it was, for a Corman movie, low-budget movie, and for what was, you got to kind of view this in the time it was made, like what superhero movies were out. We had, like, Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. You know, we had not good stuff as far as comic books. Dr. Mordo. So during the time, this time, I thought it's, and like I said, I think it's the strongest Fantastic Four movie out.
Well said. See, what about you, man? Well, some positives.
There's a lot. I think there's a lot in this movie that they get right. Doom's costume, I think, looks good.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, this is Botter. Sorry for interrupting this episode, but I'll keep it brief. I wanted to let you know about a massive sale we have going on over at the Short Box Store on all of our merchandise and apparel. That's theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com. You can now save 20% off your entire order using the discount code YO, YOO. So if you've been waiting for the right time to finally buy that gauntlet snapback, or if you ever wanted to buy any of the shirts you see me wear on the podcast, well, now's your chance to get them for a steal. We still have a few sizes left of everything, but they won't last long, and once they're gone, they are gone. And did I mention that all of our apparel is screen printed on high quality material? None of that heat transfer or direct to garment stuff. Our shirts are some of the most comfortable ones you'll ever wear, and the hats look even better in person. So wear your support for the Short Box Nation proudly, knowing that you're going to look damn good doing it. Get to theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com as soon as you can, and don't forget to use that discount code YO, YOO, to save 20% off your entire order. All of this information can be found in this episode's show notes if you want to get there faster. Thanks for not pressing fast forward. Now back to the show.
And
they even put the pistol in there.
Dude, all of it.
The pistol.
Like, straight, he was like, zoop, like, when he pulled that up, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like 60s Doom. There he is, right there.
I think I heard Bobo say, go ahead, T'Challa, when he busted out the claws.
Dude, I mean, there was a lot, like, keep in mind this movie wasn't meant to be released. It was created so that way they could hold on to it.
How horrible is that?
Can you imagine?
Yo, that hurt me when I found out about that, the fact that they said, they made this movie, you can tell they put, like, some acting. They put their, like you said, their heart and soul, and just to be like, you were paid to basically make the Argo version of that movie.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? Fantastic Four is the Argo version of that movie they made to get those guys off of it. I was like, dude, that's awesome.
Man. So you're saying they're heroes?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man.
That's what I felt.
Yeah, the actors, if you look them up, they're all like working actors. Like they get work, you know. They didn't come and they didn't slouch. They were given a really bad script.
Yeah.
And they made it work. Like, you can't get mad at the costumes because the costumes look just like they do in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, if you got a problem with that, then I don't know what to say. Like, don't pick up the comic because it's just as corny.
Yeah.
I like that. The thing is the animatronics surrounding the costume is really good. I like it better than the new one.
Yeah.
Like, no disrespect to Michael Chiklis or the actor that portrayed him in, you know, the new ones, but I like the way it looks, and I don't know. There's a lot of good things visually going on, and everything else that didn't work was chalked up to script and lack of money.
Yeah, well said. Drew, I know that 2015's Josh Trank Fantastic Four movie is still your favorite. I mean,
it's only my favorite when a child explains to me what they saw, because then it's just that movie. The story behind that movie is actually better. Like, you don't have to watch the movie; just know what it's about, and then tell that movie to somebody.
Wait, it's on Disney Plus.
I'm gonna watch it tonight. Then,
Drew, what were some of the positives or aspects that you enjoyed from this movie?
Okay, so the writing. I would honestly, the fact that we got an hour and a half and it was actually like just tightly knit.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, like the motivations were there. Like, you knew why everyone was doing what they were doing.
Yeah. Like, exactly. And then the fact that The thing he leaves, like as soon as he leaves, and then he's like, "All right, well, nobody really respects me and stuff." And then they're like, "All right, well, let's just scoop him up to the mole people, and that's where Alicia's going to be." So that's like everything I thought that was really, really cool. Alicia, she's actually a statue maker, so she was the one that was doing like the memorial statue, which I thought was like, I was like, "Oh, okay, this is."
Let me ask you a question. This movie is so crazy, and did you for 1 minute at any point think we might see the puppet master?
Ooh. Oh, I wish.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. That, yeah, I thought that was going to be
Jules Maker or whatever his name was.
I would, yes, I would 100% agree that I would have liked to see that kind of cameo. Was anybody else looking for Stanley? I swear, I was just like, all right, here he comes.
Didn't he disavow the movie, too? Like, he's like, eh.
Yeah, he did.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Yo, the movie's not that bad. I'm telling you right
Stanley
now.
Stanley even came to the set, because I know, like, when Stanley dismissed the movie, like a lot of the actors were upset about, you know, it's like, you brought donuts that one day. What the fuck, dude?
Donuts!
It was all a sham, true believer.
Was the lady that played Alicia Masters in the back, you brought donuts? You know, I'm sorry, she really, that was her moment. She was like, this is going to win me the Oscar.
She's like, this is going to be released, it's going to be a blockbuster.
I think I'll go ahead and echo what you guys are saying as far as, it's got a lot of heart. And it really gives me fantastic, like, Kirby and Stan Lee, like, vibes where just a lot of, like, kooky stuff is going on. And just, like, and it felt very true to how kind of a comic book reads, where there's a lot of, like, things going on. And then in the end, they kind of, like, tie it all together.
You wrap it up.
Yeah, wrap it up. Like, I thought it was a good decision to have, like, Ben kind of go off on his own. And then he ends up, like, running into the jeweler in this movie.
Jesus Christ.
And then he ends up getting recruited. Like, I was like, man, this would happen in a comic book. This would happen to Ben Grimm. I think, it's probably no secret by now, but Ben Grimm definitely was my favorite character in this. Because I think they also captured his relationship with Reed in the very early days, and it was kind of cool to see that progression into...
Yeah, it's funny. So when they were in class in the very beginning, and I was like, you see Reed instantly. He knows all the answers to all the questions, and he's like, yeah, let me see your homework. Me, 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 me. There you go. Like, he's multitasking Reed style, and then there's, like, the beefy dude sitting next to him, and I'm like... I'll be damned if that ain't Ben Grimm. That's kind of cool. And then I was like, oh, shit, it is Ben Grimm.
Well, like, that, but it's like, why would he be in the same class?
He says he's just as smart as him, right?
College of 40-year-old students.
Bro, can we please talk about that after you're done?
I was going to say, if he's an Air Force pilot, he would be taking those classes, for sure.
Okay, for sure. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Why do all, like, the 20-year-olds in movies look like they're 30 and 40?
In the 90s and 80s, it was always
just
like that.
Watch 90210.
Yeah. I mean, Luke Perry had driveways that went back to here. And he was like, I'm in high school, guys.
The girl who ran the paper was seriously, like, 50 years old.
Now, was there any, and I think we probably had a few of them that we shared prior to record, but was there any moments that kind of took you out of it, or just you just could not help but facepalm?
Any of those, like, uncomfortable moments where they were just, like, Reed's just looking.
Yeah, every male in, like, here is a creep.
That's the thing. I was like, movie. Nah, I'm good, bro. Like, that's okay. Like, any of those just does, like...
Not every male.
Well,
outside of Ben, yeah, yeah.
No, you're talking about Johnny. Creepy. We're talking about Johnny, though. Johnny's
like borderline special needs. He needs a helmet. I thought
Johnny was the weakest because they just really leaned in on him being a moron.
Head.
More so a moron. I guess for me, Johnny's always been like Dennis the Menace, like kind of Calvin and Hobbes.
You're assuming the script was written to be released for public consumption.
True.
This is under the assumption that some guy gave a crap.
I mean, when Johnny, because it's like, all right, Johnny lights his hand on fire prior, you know, when they crash land, but then acts like he's never done it when he lights his hand on fire with the doctor.
Yeah, see, I thought he was going to make a joke out of it.
Like, yeah, and he's like,
and then flick him off, like, or something.
I'm like, you fucking moron. Like, yo.
Oh, Johnny. Poor Johnny.
That fight scene where it's like, let's not film a fight scene today, guys, and they just spin the ring around. That was gold. Pure gold.
Ed, was there any moments where you just could not run with it or buy it?
My thing is, like, besides the first meeting of Sue and Reed. That was really super creepy. Oh. Just the, like, Dr. Doom's just muffled dialogue, because I read a little bit about it, and the actor wanted to do some ADR so that you could actually understand what the hell he was saying.
Nope.
Because you could tell he is really
Darth
hamming
Vader-ing
it up.
Darth Vader-ing the shit out of it. Like, sure. Darth Vader.
And
Darth Vader.
He said he would even go back and do it now for free if they re-release this movie.
Wow, that's sad.
So, yeah, well.
He's got a lot of time on it.
Need to get down that convention circuit, guys.
He would make a killing.
Oh, he would.
See, what about you? Anything that you're just like, ugh.
So, yes, and the ugh was kind of to the movie's credit. Hmm. So when Alicia is in alone in her apartment, and those creeps break in, and they basically kidnap a blind woman, but not before they, like, torment her first. She can't see. Like, I was like, that would be a good scene in a movie to show instantly. Those guys were douches. Mm. That is someone that's in danger that needs saving. Like, but no one was there to save her.
Yeah. Well, if this was supposed to be Mole Man and, like, originally written as
like
Mole
Man. Like little moloids running
yeah,
in there.
That yeah, that would make sense for them making, like, just like,
right.
Just fucking grab her, guys.
Right.
What are you guys doing?
Yeah, I think it created a genuine tension, right? Like, I don't, which I think might be, now that I know how the movie is, by accident. Like, no, there's no way it worked
well,
on purpose.
The fingers, that loses effect when you're kidnapping a blind person.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
You know.
And it's just creepy. It was so weird and creepy. And I think it was like, oh, those guys. I'm more afraid of those guys than I am of Dr. Doom. Freaking dad joke Doom rolling up in there like, hello. Is this thing on? I think I know how to use Zoom, guys, but I don't think the video is hello.
I think, Ed, I think I had heard you mention it briefly before we hit record, but was it me or were they playing the same score?
Yeah.
Every scene.
Oh, it's a Jurassic Park vibe.
Oh,
yeah.
And
it
was a Jurassic Park.
They stole Jurassic Park
vibes.
Score.
Like the whole time. Yeah. Every time the park's about to open. Yeah.
Now, mind you, there was some scores where I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, Dr. Doom's score was pretty menacing. I like
for
that.
For the budget.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a guy with a Casio.
There's no licensed music.
Yeah, it's a guy with a Casio. And he's just like, buddy, we're going to need you to make magic here. We are going to need you to gold out of this straw.
Just keep reusing that.
Rumpelstiltskin's on my
not
back.
Not one licensed song in this movie at all. Not even, like, closing credits. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, gents, I don't think
who
it's...
Who edited this movie? I want to know who went into the trouble
genius.
To edit this movie just to be like, all right, I did it. All right, yeah, we're not releasing it, man. Like,
yo, imagine...
I missed my kid's fucking birthday. Like,
sleepless nights.
I told you my mom. Like, I told my mom.
My marriage
oh,
fell
by the way,
apart.
This isn't coming out.
I want to find the editor and just give him, all right, Josh's Trank's Fantastic Four movie. I want to give him the first Star Wars movie. I want to give him... the
it's
Force
be like
Awakens.
Snyder cut, except
yeah,
with
basically
this guy.
Just like, yo, cut all the movies, make them better.
So I don't think it's a stretch to say that
I
the
what you did there.
Last.
Oh, that's
oh
a
wow.
Mr. Fantastic
I mean, come on,
joke.
You know, a little light work. Yeah, I mean, yo, is this on? I said stretch.
Now stare into Caesar's eyes.
Huh?
I love you.
Look at me. I was like, Doom, all right, dude, we fucking get it, yes.
All
right, real quick.
So you're going to save
real
my
quick.
Life, huh, bitch? Why don't you just let me go then?
I
let
dare
me
you.
Go.
I dare you.
You.
Huh? I dare you.
Nope, not going to do it. Fuck it.
And he was laughing on his way down, so.
Yeah.
He was a jolly monarch.
He's like,
also, in the beginning of the movie, when he gets electrocuted, I said, damn, look at that pool noodle electrocuting this man for 10 minutes. And then the light. Lightning like withdrew when like Ben put it was like.
Yeah. That's how electricity works.
Also, I'm sorry.
My
now we got to get back to
here.
Our zingers. When Human Torch punched the laser and then came back from outer space, I was like,
he was like,
there's
on
no
a fountain on
space.
It at first, where he's
he
like,
had enough time,
around.
Like to do a victory lap around the Earth. His family was in danger still.
Okay. How did he all know right, that right. He can fly? Like, at what point did
slow
he just
laser.
Go, like, flame on?
Yeah, he just...
And he wasn't screaming like a bitch on that, you know?
just...
All right, but...
because
I don't think,
movie.
I don't. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that the last three Fantastic Four movies that we've gotten in the last 15 years
wow.
have not been the best received. I think among the comic book community, they just aren't really good movies. I don't know too many people personally that enjoyed them. So I want to ask you guys, do you think at this point the Fantastic Four property is worth doing a reboot? I mean, are they yes. do they translate yes. to the big screen? Yes. In your yes. opinion,
that's a big yes. part of the Marvel universe that they yes. haven't touched yet.
So make it in the '60s, dude.
Dude, Disney can do a period family piece. Superhero. Who's gonna do a better job than Disney doing yeah. a family? I would dude. Say do like, mm. a, and I know we've probably talked about this, but doing like a kind of like a Johnny Quest like episodic show. Mm.
For sure,
you know, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Or just do Johnny Quest.
Drew, what about you? Do you still want to? Do you want to see the Fantastic Four?
Oh yeah, definitely. What's the homeboy's name that did the no speaking
Krasinski?
Movie?
John Krasinski.
John Krasinski.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. I want him. I want him and Emily Blunt as Sue Storm and Reed Richards. So if they can do that, integrate them in a TV show, whatever. I just want them to start them off. Reed just straight black hair and just give him a little pepper. Just a little
pepper.
Every fight, not just, every crisis, it just
not just
gets
like
more
a paintbrush,
gray.
A white paint.
Yeah.
Is there a particular story arc or villain or character that you want to see them incorporate or use in said reboot or a future movie?
Purple Galactus. Galactus.
Actual Galactus.
Not grasshoppers.
I'll go ahead and add. I would love to see them incorporate. Valerie Richards, Sue and Reed's daughter, because I think it would definitely humanize yeah. them a little more, but also really lean in on that family aspect that I think the other movies just have been kind of missing.
Yeah, you like need the Future Foundation, you can really.
I would say
off
get
that.
Mephisto up in there.
Ooh,
make it take place in the '60s. Have Mephisto trap them in some sort of weird hell dimension for like forever. And then Doctor Ooh. Strange will rescue them, right? There we go. Now we have them in contemporary modern day.
You're giving too much
day.
Of the sauce. You're giving
you know
too much
saying?
Of the sauce.
No, I'm
sorry. I'm sorry. Your mic's
muted out.
I'm just saying.
No, that's good. That's
like
good.
When they fight for Doom's mother's soul, he just kind of
yeah.
catches.
Mm. So, I don't know. Again, they got the character right. Doom is a scientist, right? But yeah. you saw him like take out the little necklace, kiss it, put it back. He's yeah. also like half magician, according to the comics, like he's yeah. a wizard, like he fucks with the supernatural.
His mother was a witch, so
right.
he has like magic.
He
and
knows
science.
About that. So like you want to get mad at like, this movie? It's god awful as a film. It's god awful. It's horrible. As a Fantastic Four movie, though,
yes,
not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
I think this FF movie I've had the most fun in. I think about the other ones, and because they took themselves very serious. I just got to judge them serious. But this one, man, I was like, damn. I love the campiness. This is kind of mm-hmm. embodies the spirit of what I imagine reading Fantastic Four in the mid-60s was when Kirby and Jack – I'm sorry, Stan and Jack were writing it.
You were right the first time.
Jack yeah, were writing it and drawing it.
All right, gents, I want to go ahead and, like we normally do on our live shows, invite audience members up to do some trivia and win a prize. So I am asking for two brave individuals who would like to come up.
Yes! Nothing says bravery like Tom Pandage coming.
It's Fantastic Four trivia, a little bit of the comic books, a little of the movie. Come on up. We'll keep it lighthearted. And there's a prize for you guys. So I see Tom Pandage
coming
on. All right,
Bobo, you coming or what?
Bobo's coming on.
All right, all right.
All right. Okay.
Seemed a bit hesitant.
Let me see. So I got my answers right here. If you guys want to come over here so the patrons at home can see you guys. And
how many
whatnot.
Are in the Fantastic Four?
All right.
He's not wrong.
He's not. You're not wrong.
So I got seven questions and then a bonus one.
Way more than four.
Ooh.
And it'll just be best of seven. Here, let me go and stand up for you.
Uh-oh.
Right. There we go. All right. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, Mr.
Tom Pandage?
Mm. Tom Pandage. Give it a round of applause for Tom Pandage.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm your friendly neighborhood nerd, the Bobo. I'm a poet, professional wrestler, and a podcaster.
Oh. Ask for your name, man. Come on.
Resume here.
I'm kidding. Bobo. All right, Tom and Bobo. First question. How much did producer, and I'm going to slaughter this name. What's up? Oh, come on in. Come on, guys. Come on, pull on in. Corey's trying to take pictures.
Places.
All right. How much did producer, I'm going to slaughter this name, Bernard Etchenberg? All right. Etchinger. Huh?
Keep going.
Etchinger. buy the Fantastic Four film rights for. How much did he buy the Fantastic Four film rights for?
$50,000 $50,000
and
1 cent.
Ooh,
Price is right.
Both of you are wrong.
$1
Which one was closer?
The Fantastic Four. Well, I guess Babbo is closer, so Babbo got that one. The film rights were bought in 1986 for $250,000. Yeah. Question number two, gents. According to the contract, Eichinger would lose the rights if he did not produce a movie by when? Give me the month and year. Whoever's closest gets it. Tom?
No. Oh.
Shit. So wow.
I'm going to go May 2000.
Okay.
Way earlier than that. I would say January 1992.
Oh, that's pretty close.
Ding, 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 Tom. You were pretty close. So he would lose the rights if he didn't go into production by December 1992, still in the same year. In order to hold on to the rights and stall until he can convince Hollywood to make a big-budget movie, he hires Roger Corman, a.k.a. the king of B-movies, to produce this movie for $1 million. $1 million budget after Roger Corman worked down the original $30 million estimate. Moving on. Question number three. Give me the name of the comic in the year the Fantastic Four debuted.
Fantastic Four number one, 1964.
Okay. Okay. Babbo?
I want to say it's like Tales or Stories to Marvel in 1964.
Tom Pandish, ladies and gents. Fantastic Four number one debuted in November 1961 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And as Ed had mentioned, Stan Lee has gone on to say in regards to this movie that the entire production was a sham. It was never supposed to be released by any human beings. That was in LA Magazine. Question number four. How much did Eichinger reportedly pay Corman to stand down and not release the movie? You say $250,000, Babbo? What about you? Babbo got it just by being far off close. I think Corman was paid $1 million to stand down.
Budget?
Yeah. For the same price of the budget, he pays Corman $1 million to not release the movies. Of course, the copies of the film were destroyed by then Marvel chief at the time, Avi Arad, who you might recognize as the former CEO of Toy Biz. CEO and founder of Marvel Studios. His last body of work that he was attached to was actually Into the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse?
Question number five. Eichinger, the same producer, later went... All right, Tom, I'll switch it up. The jeweler in this movie shares many traits in common with a major villain in the Fantastic Four comics, the Mole Man. Both of them have a hideous appearance, small stature, and an army of followers who adore them and live in the sewers. What was Mole Man's first comic book appearance?
You can take a shot at it. I know it.
So, we need the Dick Swing it. Like, title and year, or what do we need? I'm going to go with Fantastic Four. I'm going to say you debuted in Fantastic Four. Oh, that's why I asked that question. let's go issue number 74.
Okay, issue number 74. Tom, what about you?
Issue one.
Boom, boom, boom. Fantastic Four. Issue one was the first appearance of the Mole Man.
Now, Tom.
Easy,
now.
Johnny Confidence.
All right, last question. And I think at this moment, Tom leads by one. So... Baba, you got to get this right to tie
Come
it
on,
up.
Man.
All right. Had this movie originally released as originally planned in 1994, it would have been among the other handful of superhero and comic book-based movies in theaters that year. Give me one or two of those movies.
Two wins.
Superhero or comic book movies that were in theaters in 1994 that this movie would have been among. Just give me one if you want.
Because I remember looking this up, because Robert Pattinson is basically based off of if Bruce Wayne was in 1994, if he was like, the parents died in 1994, and I remember looking up a list of movies. Oh, my God.
Tom is scratching his palm. Tom, do you got one?
I think I got one. Was Darkman 94?
Oh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Can one of my co-hosts look that up for me real quick? I don't have it. I don't have it on my list.
You told me not to be on my phone while we're recording. That's what you said. You said, Andrew, let me talk to you real quick. Get off the phone.
Baba, while we're looking that up, do you got a superhero movie or comic movie that came out in 1994?
1990. Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Bam, you forfeit everything.
Jesus. I'm going to go Batman Returns.
Mm. So some of the close. Acceptable ones that I had, Blank Man, The Crow,
Blankman.
Guyver.
That's a great superhero.
I said superhero. The Mask was out at the time, The Shadow, Time Cop, and Cemetery Man.
Time Cop?
Time Cop?
Hey, look, I...
Time Cop.
Hey, man, I don't make the rules. I just make the podcast questions.
All right, I got one last tiebreaker, okay? Name another Roger Corman. Or name another movie Roger Corman has produced.
It's easy. Ooh,
nice.
Come on. That's super
There's
easy.
Like 1,000 movies.
Huh? Do you have anything?
Go, Tom's about to dunk on it. Tom's like, you got anything before I dunk?
Go ahead. You got it.
Death Race 2000. Piranha.
Yeah. You're required to give five.
Yeah. All right. Oh,
we can do five.
I know he can.
He's doing it, Peter. He's doing it.
Do you have anything to do with alligator?
Ouch. Sorry. All your questions.
All points are gone.
You want a lifeline? Lifeline?
No.
All right. Yeah. Ladies and gents, I would have also accepted Silence of the Lambs, Little Shop of Horrors, Frankenstein Unbound, or The Wild Angels. I will say Roger Corman has... said that this experience filming the Fantastic Four is one of the strangest he's ever had, and the end result was one of the strangest as well.
That's coming from Roger Corman. Yeah.
Ladies and gents, let's go ahead and give a round of applause for Bobo and Tom. Tom, you end up winning.
Good job.
No whammies. I'm going to ask you wrestling questions.
Tom, you end up winning a copy of Doomed, The Untold Story of Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four, a documentary!
Yo, you got to go actually upstairs to their DVD player and get it out.
That's a good documentary.
Use the same one.
It's really good.
All right. Gentlemen, that is the last... I thought I had something. I don't know what I was going to say. Guys, this was fun. Shortbox patrons, audience members, thank you guys so much for coming out. See Ed, Drew, you guys got any closing remarks? Thank you. Do you guys have any closing remarks, any last things you guys want to say?
I had a fantastic time, man.
Now look Drew in the eyes.
I love you.
You're doing, dude, I thought about you. When they start doing that to the faces, it's like, there you are, Peter.
I swear. Yeah, there were so many Wendy moments.
I was like, where's Andy at? Where's Andy at? Where'd he go?
Drew, any last comments?
No, that was perfect. What do you want me to do?
Oh, man, aggressive.
Yo, it's...
Sorry. Clobbering time.
This is the first time up here.
Act like you've been here.
Trial by fire.
Ed, what about you? Anything you want to say? Anything you want to wrap us up with?
This has been fun.
All right, well, I do have something long-winded.
Oh, Jesus.
Huh.
The director of this movie, Oli Sassone, in 2018 said, after 22 years, I'm sure I said that wrong.
Sasson. Like,
so that's
like
what
you put
down
right,
that's
right?
Put,
yeah, like, like Drew and I just got hungry.
That was for real.
Vidal Sassoon.
I was like, Oli Sheshwin. Oli Sheshwin.
The director of this film, Bobby Adobo. Willie Burritos.
The director has said, after 22 years, people are still talking about this movie. And I doubt, seriously, in 22 years from now, they'll be talking about the other Fantastic Four movies.
Yo,
true.
He's not wrong.
Yo,
he's
the shade, right? But I think we're all inclined to agree, and I tip my hat to Roger Corman and everyone who was involved in this movie for giving us a reason to come together tonight with some of our closest friends and supporters, not only to laugh, but also to unite over a very small piece of the much larger comic book culture that we all love and cherish. Shortbox Nation.
Don't you do it.
I'm trying to sign us out. See,
Don't you fucking do it.
Anyway, Shortbox Nation, for our listeners listening at home, this is the end of our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to our live audience here with us. Thank you so much for joining us for a fun event.
Don't you clap for him.
This show would not be the best comic book and pop culture podcast in the country without your support. Thank you for our Short Box friends. Make sure that you subscribe so you can stay up to date with our latest episodes. And if you want the opportunity to join us for our next secret live show, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com.
They are.
Well, I'm talking to the people listening to this episode.
Shit.
Consider becoming a Short Box patron at patreon.com/theshortbox. Short Box Nation, be safe.
This is recorded.
Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
Short Box Podcast is recorded.
And most importantly,
live studio audience.
God damn you.
Tom, good question. Oh, now, no. Tom had just asked, Botter, how should we keep it? And I'll tell you guys, damn it, Short Box Nation, keep it geeky.
I quit. I'm quitting the show.
Wait, what is this?
I quit. Oh, that won't be necessary. I quit.
Yo, what happened to peace? Peace.